The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got a new cook in the Biden administration's climate policy kitchen. His name is Ali Zaidi, and we'll be talking about him and about whether this kitchen has a few too many cooks. Stay tuned. Hello, and welcome back once again to Parts Per Billion, the environmental podcast from Bloomberg Law. I'm your host, David Schultz. So, in my opinion, one of the more tired cliches in government these days is the czar. The way it usually goes is there's an issue with a lot of urgency behind it, and the president appoints one person to oversee all actions on that issue. Think the drug czar or the COVID czar. Of course, those with even a passing familiarity with Russian history will know that calling someone a czar really isn't, or at least shouldn't be, a compliment. But with all that being said, we have a new climate czar in this country. His name is Ali Zaidi, and his official title as of about a month ago is White House National Climate Advisor. If you haven't heard of Zaidi, you probably have heard of his predecessor in this role, former EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy. She announced she'd be stepping down shortly after the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act and its billions in funding for climate projects, and no, that timing was not a coincidence. To learn more about why McCarthy stepped down, why Zaidi is taking her place, and what exactly it is he'll be doing, I rang up Bloomberg Law reporter and Parts Per Billion regular Stephen Lee. He said Zaidi was chosen as a post-legislation leader, not a pre-legislation leader, and we'll get into what that means in a bit. But first, I asked Stephen to tell me who Zaidi actually is.
Okay, so Ali Zaidi is, he's one of these DC people that you sometimes meet who's just has kind of a glittering resume. He went to Harvard and Georgetown. He has a law degree. He, at a pretty young age, went to work in the Obama administration. He was a pretty high-ranking aide to Stephen Chu at Energy. And he was also the energy guy at OMB under President Obama. He is the former chairman of climate policy in New York State, so he was leading that state's efforts on clean energy. He's also a former adjunct professor at Stanford, and he's worked at a couple of white shoe law firms, and he's been at part of the White House's climate team since Biden got started. So he's done a lot, especially for a young guy.
So he's a real insider, a real government insider, and I think you drew a nice contrast in your story between him and his predecessor, Gina McCarthy, who was the head of the EPA, of course, and she, you know, was very used to being out in the public, going, you know, talking to the media, kind of mixing it up. It sounds like he's more of someone who is more comfortable behind the scenes. Is that fair to a fair characterization?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that Gina McCarthy, as we all know, I mean, she had this huge personality and she was very charismatic. And, you know, in the climate world, she's a superstar. Everyone knows Gina McCarthy. And what we've heard is that that was really important during the kind of first 2 years of Biden. You needed to have someone who could be a really effective salesperson, you know, selling the Biden climate agenda and rallying support and getting people excited and getting voters excited.
And getting folks on Capitol Hill excited.
Just building support for the sort of ideas that were coming out of the White House, and now that the infrastructure bill and the climate bill have passed, we're now moving into the implementation stage. And so what you want is someone who is a real technocrat, someone who has very deep experience with the technology and with the policy and with the economics. Not that Gina McCarthy isn't also skilled in those areas, but I think people seem to feel as though Ali Zaidi is a guy whose skills just match up really very well with the task at hand. I should also say that, you know, there is a part of being the White House climate czar that I think is it's a political job. It's a sort of a sales job. And Zaidi has been out there. I mean, he makes a lot of appearances, and he's, you know, got his own powers of persuasion.
Yeah, I don't want to make him seem like a, you know, a shrinking violet. Like, he's, you know, he's a pretty sort of dynamic, powerful guy in his own right.
Yeah, I think he's been pretty effective at making the sales pitch, and I think the White House is they seem to be pretty satisfied with the job that he's doing there.
Well, let's talk about not the job that he has done, but the job that he will be doing now as the new climate czar. As you mentioned, he's going to be responsible for implementing a lot of the climate provisions that were in the IRA. What are some of the traps that he could fall into, and what are the stakes here for him?
I think there's really two challenges here. One is just the sheer size of both the climate bill and the infrastructure bill. I mean, the climate bill has $369 billion. There's billions more in the infrastructure bill. So we're talking about roads and bridges and renewable power all across the country. It's just hard to keep track of all that money. It's hard to make sure that it's all spent, you know, the way it's supposed to be spent, and to make sure that every project goes smoothly. We know that there are Republican lawmakers who are going to be watching very closely, you know, looking for the next Solyndra that they can make political hay out of.
Right. And let's remind our listeners what that was. That was a solar energy company that went belly up and was very, very controversial in the Obama administration.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Democrats have made the argument that, you know, when you are funding all these different projects, some of them, they don't, you know, pan out in the way that you expect or that they expect, and that's just part of the bargain, right? Like, not everything is going to be a home run. So that is a challenge. It's impossible, I would think, that there's not going to be some hiccups here and there when there's this kind of money going out the door.
Well, it seems like he has to balance two priorities that are basically incompatible with each other. He has to get the money out quickly, but he also has to make sure that it's spent correctly. And I don't think you can totally accomplish both of those things 100%.
The getting it out quickly is the second challenge that I think he faces. You know, we this is where we run into issues of permitting, investment, supply chains. You know, can you get all the materials and the workers, you know, in the right place at the right time? It has to be, you know, made in America. And then we run into this political challenge, too, because he's got to get all these states to play ball. And it's not going to be easy in some parts of the country that fundamentally oppose the Biden agenda.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Let's talk about another potential obstacle for Zadie, which is that there are a lot of other officials in the Biden administration who have a piece of this. And I made some notes here. So we have John Kerry. A pretty big name, who is the special envoy for climate. You also have John Podesta, who was hired around the same time as Zadie, who is a senior clean energy advisor. He's, of course, been a very, very large figure within the Democratic Party for a long time. Oh, and let's not forget Michael Regan and Jennifer Granholm, cabinet secretaries at the EPA and DOE, respectively. You know, how much authority does Zadie really have, given that these other big names are also, you know, have their fingers in the pot, so to speak?
Well, here's what we know. So John Kerry is the international guy. Okay, so pretty clear division of labor there. He's the guy that goes to these UN events and that kind of thing.
That makes sense.
Regan and Granholm, you mentioned, primarily regulators and rule writers. Zadie, we imagine, is going to be playing a sort of a coordinating role. So bringing together all of the agencies, convening interagency working groups, and he also has a direct line to the president. So he's going to be influential in shaping top-down policy on a whole bunch of things like land conservation and public health and environmental justice and, of course, economic growth and green jobs. So when you hear Biden talking about that kind of stuff, there's a pretty good chance it'll either have come from or been vetted by Ali Zadie. So I see him as more of a sort of top-down type of person.
I see. Maybe it's just that what was tripping me up is the title, you know, Climate Czar, which is, of course, not his official title. That's just an informal, you know, nickname. When I think of a czar, I think of someone with kind of absolute authority. And it sounds like, you know, climate coordinator, climate wrangler, I guess, would be maybe a more appropriate title than Climate Czar.
You know, this is where Republican lawmakers start to push back because they don't like the idea of czars either. And they want to know who's in charge, who's calling the shots, who's responsible for what. I mean, you've got all these different people. How many different decision makers do we need to have? I mean, obviously, it's a huge job that affects the entire economy. But there is definitely this sense among Republicans that there's a lot of unelected bureaucrats running around making all kinds of important decisions that affect people's lives in a very tangible way. And who's doing what?
Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up because you actually quoted Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, you know, who's a big critic of the Biden administration's environmental policy. And she said exactly what you just said, but added on, she thinks this is on purpose. She thinks that the Biden administration is bringing on all of these sort of bureaucrats as a way to obfuscate what it's actually doing. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Do you think that that is a valid criticism that Senator Capito is leveling?
It's a criticism that she's been making for a long time. So I've not heard any criticism really of Ali Zadie as a person. He's clearly a pretty legit guy. I think everyone sees that. And he's also so new in the job and not a whole lot is known about him. But as you say, there is definitely skepticism about, as Republicans like to say, unelected bureaucrats. And this question of, you know, should these decisions be more transparent and should they, you know, go through Congress? Obviously, it depends on the issue that we're talking about, but they have made this argument repeatedly as a way of kind of undermining all these actions that Biden has been undertaking.
Yeah. And then finally, you know, speaking of the sort of the response from the right side of the aisle, you also quoted someone in your story who is a conservative, Alex Flint, who was pretty happy about this, who was glad that, Zadie was promoted to this position. Can you talk about him and the viewpoint that he represents?
You know, I think there is a view among kind of Democrats and centrists, and certainly at the White House, that we do need to build stuff quickly. If we're going to reach these climate goals that the president has set out, there is definitely a need to go faster and to build stuff faster. And that's why you hear the president saying that we need to reform the permitting process. I mean, it's interesting. It will be interesting to see how the administration, you know, handles this issue, because there are lots of places where the desire to get stuff built quickly and the desire to protect the environment, they don't really match up perfectly. And so it just seems like
that's a really good point.
That's a tough one for the White House.
Yeah, and that's where someone like Flint comes in. He's leads a group that's pushing for a carbon tax or for some sort of market-based solution to climate change. And it sounds like he's happy that Zaidi is in there, because he thinks that, you know, this would be someone who might be able to, if not get it that done, then get the government a little bit closer to that, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, and that's also, that was a big part of the climate bill. A lot of that stuff is tax incentives. So let's see if we can, you know, create incentives for the private industry to do this stuff. And if we can get to that place, then maybe there doesn't need to be as much federal intervention or federal investment. And so, yeah, that's definitely something that I think the White House is hoping takes hold and takes off.
All right, strange bedfellows, as they say. That was Stephen Lee, reporter with Bloomberg Law, speaking about Ali Zaidi. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thanks, David.
And that'll do it for today's episode of Parts Per Billion. If you want more environmental news, check us out on Twitter. We use the handle @environment. Just that, @environment. I'm @DavidBSchultz if you want to talk to me about anything. Today's episode of Parts Per Billion was produced by myself, David Schultz. Parts Per Billion was created by Jessica Coombs and Rachel Daigle and is edited by Zach Sherwood and Chuck McCutcheon. Our executive producer is Josh Block. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
An individual's race should not be used to help him or harm him in his life's endeavors.
A pair of lawsuits has made its way to the Supreme Court, and the decision could dramatically change just who gets into which college.
Bloom is effectively using the Asian community as pawns.
Every lawsuit needs a villain
to mask an anti-Black and anti-Latino agenda.
Does this demoralize me? No, it doesn't demoralize me.
This season on Uncommon Law, we'll explore the arguments and the people driving this latest battle over affirmative action. Can the Constitution be used to remedy society's ills?
I'm the only person in class who has to raise my hand and say, okay, well, actually, here's how this affects people that look like me.
Does the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause prohibit all discrimination based on race?
You let somebody in because of their race, you're keeping somebody else out because of their race.
There might have been 2 or 3 Latinos, including me. And so somehow that's too much, somehow that goes too far. It's hard not to take that very personally.
Coming October 25th, part one of a 3-part series on affirmative action.
What's being decided is whether Black and brown people are going to be excluded in significant numbers.
Only on Uncommon Law from Bloomberg Industry Group.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.